Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Content warning. This episode contains discussion of sexual assault and harm done to a teenager. Listener discretion is advised. After making a reputation for himself as a prolific cattle rustler with a predilection for preteen girls, Ken Rex McElroy felt invincible. He dodged every criminal charge that came his way and lived life by his own rules. But soon, he turned his violence towards townspeople, and it seemed like he would finally face legal consequences. This week's episode is The Killing of Ken Rex McElroy, Part 2.
In the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you. Well, I already said after this episode's over, we're gonna said I wanted to go to Skidmore and find Ken McElroy's grave on it because fuck this guy. And if episode one didn't give you enough fuck this guy ammunition, buckle up for part two.
It really does just keep getting worse to the point where, again, like if you were writing a movie, a screenplay, you'd be like, okay, there's been too many murders and sexual assaults at this point. Like we're kind of beating everybody over the head with it. That it's just like repetitive, constant, nonstop terror for decades against this small town. And then, you know, even places around it. He traveled around too. Just that somebody of this nature can just roam the streets like this for this long really pisses me off. So you're going to pee on the grave. I'll do something too.
You take it in and out bag and fill it.
I'll take an in and out bag. And yeah, we'll take pics for proof. But just, he is a huge piece of shit. What did I say? I said this dude sucks shit.
That's what
which is
it.
What I usually reserve for things I really, really hate.
It's true. And we can't even put it, what you'll hear today is heinous stuff. But for every one large incident we're going to talk about today, there are probably 10 to 20 small ones. Somebody cut him off on the road and runs their car off the road or waits for them after they park and comes and just puts a gun directly in their face and is like, I'm going to kill you right now. And it's like he liked to see people tremble and squirm and wiggle. And at some point, it's like the wiggling is not enough is what I think we'll see today is an escalation of behaviors. But a brief
aside.
It
really is the smallest slight against him.
Yes, yes.
Would just send him into orbit. He had zero, as my therapist would call it, a window of tolerance. He
did not have tolerance. No, it was 0-2. There is a shotgun directly in your face. For sure. I was going to say, though, we jumped right into this because obviously it's the episode, but we do need to do a brief aside because you're not alone in the studio. It's not visible on camera. Maybe we'll figure out a new setup, but I've seen it personally. There are two living creatures, and we're not talking about your dog, Kate, or your pet pig, Petal, are we? What is
no,
in the room with you right now?
We are now the proud owners. I don't want to say owner. We have invited two small creatures into our home to be part of this family. We got two guinea pigs this weekend,
yes,
and they are so fucking cute and funny. One of them's hair is the most crazy thing, which is why we specifically got her, because her hair is almost the same color as Ella's, and it looks like when Ella wakes up in the morning, it's just sticking every which way. They're very sweet. Ella named them. The red one's Luna, and then the little brown and white one is Pearl.
Luna and Pearl. Welcome to the menagerie, Luna and Pearl. Well, I had to announce the new, because I'm sure they're going to come up in conversation or on live streams or something. So I thought that they deserved an announcement on the show.
I appreciate that. A proper introduction. I call them the girls. Tommy calls them Thing One and Thing Two. Which honestly, kind of, especially
with the hair too.
Luna looks a bit, like a
Dr. Seuss
Grinch feet in her hair. But I told them, you're going to hear me talk for a long time, and this is part two. So if you need me to catch you up, let me know, and I'll get you caught up on part one.
Yeah, we'll have to go play part one for them. Well, you're going to have your house sitter slash nanny's got her hands quite full with now two more additions to the family as we leave town this weekend, too.
We do.
We have to say bye to Luna. But Luna, what a moon-themed. It's like Ella was like, Luna.
I said, I kind of want something witchy. And then she was like, Luna? And I was like, that's on nice.
On the draw. Yeah. Well, Luna is our official mascot of this final leg of the Full Moon Energy Tour.
She is so sweet. So she can't fly because I can't even pick her up yet. I'm gradually earning their trust. But if she could, she would be going with us this week to San Diego, Phoenix, and Vegas. I am so excited.
So excited. September 17th, San Diego, we will be in you. And then we're driving to Phoenix on the 18th and then driving to Las Vegas on the 19th. So on a dark desert highway, just like the Eagles described. But we are so excited to see y'all and bring you our special touring show. This is the last date that we're going to do out of town before our final hometown show when we close down Full Moon Energy on October 17th in Dallas. But did you also know September 17th, when we're going to be in San Diego, is the corn moon? It is this month's full moon. So what a way to kick off
the corn skull will corn have skull. To. That corn skull is going to have, what if he grows 10 times in size on the corn moon?
By that, do you mean me in my costume? We have to do.
Yeah, we've already seen it.
A big like a magician smoke pile, and I have the corn skull, and then I jump out, and I'm dressed as the corn skull. Well, no, I probably won't wear that, but we can bring the corn skull since it's the corn full moon. But we're going to talk about what lurks on the moon, what people really think happened during the Apollo mission, cryptids, true crime, all the stuff you love about the show, and more on live and on stage in your face. And if you do the VIP, if it's not sold out, you get to hang out with us for 45 minutes-ish after the show and talk about whatever you want to talk about. We answer questions, and you get a signed poster for included as part of the VIP upgrade. So make sure you are in San Diego, Phoenix, Las Vegas next week, and Dallas on October 17th. Go to sinisterhood.com/live shows. Let's fucking hang out.
I'll be accepting any and all questions about guinea pigs as well as receiving advice because a 12-year-old girl in the aisle of Petco changed my life this weekend. And I didn't catch her name, but she was the sweetest, brightest, kindest child that I – and then her mom came over and we – for like 20 minutes they told me – how to care for guinea pigs, about their guinea pigs, just talked. And I was like, I can do this. This was a sign sent to me that she just approached me. Mm-hmm. She said, are you looking at the guineas? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, they're really sweet. And then it went from there.
I love an enthusiast sharing their passion. That is it's what gets you into it. So shout out to that kid because now – I don't have to own a guinea pig, but I'm over at your house so much, it's almost like I do. So thanks, kid. Mm-hmm. And thanks you for getting me a pet, too.
Yes. And I can't wait till they're a little more comfortable. And I don't know if I told you this, but I was told when we got them that they make tiny collars and leashes so you can walk them.
Definitely going to take them for a walk. Come on.
So we so each cute. Have to take one for a walk.
That would be incredible. Oh, I can't wait. Yeah, if there's any guinea enthusiasts listening, shoot us an email at sinisterhoodpodcast@gmail.com and let Christy know if there's any guinea pig costumes, outfits, harnesses, things, amenities for their environment that could make them happier. Send them our way.
Yeah. Please do. Well, for now, I'm Christy.
And I'm Heather.
Let's get into it. Ken McElroy was 23 years old when his future wife, Trina McLeod, was born in Kansas on January 24, 1957. She was the first daughter of Clarence McLeod and his live-in girlfriend, Treva. Clarence abandoned Treva when she was 8.5 months pregnant, and Trina never knew her father. According to author Harry McLean of In Broad Daylight, Treva would often tell the little girl that Clarence left because he didn't want Trina.
And it was a classic, I'm going to go get a few things from the store. I'll be right back.
And yeah. And the classic, well, daddy left because of you. Mm-hmm. And then you have a 7-year-old girl receiving all of this information of, I got to do stuff to please men, and not having a father figure, and perhaps looking for that in other areas of her life. Mm-hmm. Treva moved from Kansas to the area near Skidmore with her sister, Brenda, leaving little Trina back in Kansas with family. In 1963, Treva found love in a thin-built dog trader from Skidmore, Ronnie Muscles McNeely. The two were married and began working together, raising and selling Ronnie's coon hunting dogs. Treva brought Trina, then 7 years old, to live in Skidmore. Ronnie and Treva had 3 more children, and the couple often put older daughter Trina in charge of childbearing and household chores.
Yeah, she's got a child, rear them and bring them up and help everything. And they said that at some point, you know, Trina might be sitting at the kitchen table smoking a cigarette and the babies are running around and crying. And she's like, Trina, get the baby's bottle. Go change the other baby. Mm-mm. Go do that. So it's like, again, you're right. It's you're seeing the path get laid for this poor woman that, as an infant, her father left and her mom tells her it's her fault. And then as even her developing years of adolescence, you're being parentified, the parentification.
I was trying to think of the word. I'm so glad you said it, because I was thinking this reminds me of when we did Quiverful. And yeah, mm-hmm. the parentification, and it just steals a child's childhood from them. And they are forced to grow up and deal with stuff that shouldn't be their responsibility. Mm-hmm. Trina attended the local school and made a few friends. According to In Broad Daylight, Trina's teacher, Ms. Whitney, considered her a sweet, kind, friendly little girl. But at age 13, Trina's teacher, her close friend Vicky, and other students started noticing a change in the middle schooler. She began skipping school, and kids noticed a much older man in a pickup truck waiting for Trina at the bus stop. Rather than board the bus to school, Trina would get into that pickup truck with her stepdad's hunting buddy, 35-year-old Ken McElroy.
And the kids were like, oh, is that like your dad? And it's like, no, he's my friend, or he's my boyfriend. Mm-mm. And they said that in the afternoon when he would drop her off at the bus stop, that sometimes she would have tears in her eyes, or sometimes her clothes would be disheveled and definitely different than the morning. And she would have to get kids on the bus like, hey, forge this paper with my mom's signature, because you're skipping so much, right? Like,
yeah.
You have to cover it up. And it turns out, you know, he was taking her, non-surprisingly, to a motel in another city most times, or driving her around, you know, at least for the first bit. But it's a pattern. Like, he does the same thing to each kid, right? Lures them in his car. And she had later said, you know, he had this nice car. He was always wearing a nice shirt. He was dressed nicer than my parents. He, you know, was throwing money around. He was buying me things. He would show up in a new Buick, a new truck. So that's how you get a 13-year-old girl. And her parents were like, thought at some times she would get picked up by a boy her age and go like, hey, I'm going to take Trina to the dance. Well, secretly, Ken McElroy gave that boy some money to go get her. And then he would take her out, drop her off back with the boy, and then trick her parents. So for a while, it's like her parents didn't even know. Your dad, you're going hunting with this guy, and you don't know secretly. Yeah. He is molesting your child.
Yeah, that it makes me sick to my stomach. The love bombing, the grooming. Again, like we talked about in the first episode, he always wanted to appear kind of better off than he was. Mm-hmm. Appearances were big for him. So dressing up, having a nice car, it's all part of the facade to get people to trust you. Mm-hmm. Clothes don't make the man. Mm-mm, so no. He might be wearing better shirts than your stepdad, but he is definitely not a better man.
Well, and they also said just that, like, any of the coon hunting meets or stuff, that he was super affable and funny and nice and friendly, and would like buddy up to people. So again, it's like you have a sense of like, oh, our friend Ken, he's accused of cattle rustling. Oh, Ken would never do that. It's like he knew how to manipulate certain different groups of people. To the people in Skidmore, he was the big bad bully and stay out of his way. To the people he wanted to, you know, do deals with at the coon trading, the hunting dog trading meets, it was very like slick the palm, mm-hmm. grease the elbows, joke around kind of guy. So it is that eerie, like, who is this really behind all these facades?
Yeah, leading a double life, perhaps even more. Just
right, triple.
Yeah, just that sociopath. Like whoever, whatever group that he's around, he kind of switches to mm-hmm. that personality. When Trina was just 14 years old, she dropped out of school because she became pregnant with McElroy's child. During this time, McElroy was still fighting charges for cattle theft in one county and charges of assault and witness intimidation for shooting his other girlfriend, Alice's stepfather, Otha Embry, in the thigh. Alice still lived with McElroy during this time, meaning she and Trina had to share the brute's attention. Although Trina's stepfather, Ronnie, tried to stand up to McElroy and warned him to leave the girl alone multiple times, each time McElroy ignored him. Ronnie was frustrated as he had seen how futile it was to challenge McElroy, especially once the madman escaped any punishment for shooting and intimidating Otha.
Yeah, I mean, you hear his last girlfriend's step-grandpa said, leave Alice alone, and he was shot in the leg. And mm-hmm. then when he pressed charges, he was shot at in a bar. And when he pressed charges for all of that, it all got dropped, so it doesn't matter anyway. And you can either leave it alone now or you're going to get shot in the leg. Yeah. And he did. I mean, he would get, Ronnie would go up and like, stay away from Trina. And it's like jumping in his face with guns. Like, what are you going to do about it? And it's like, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah. When you are impoverished and it was the 70s and don't mm-hmm. have anywhere to go, family and stuff. He really had this whole town over a barrel. Yeah. Unless you had the means to pick up your whole life and move to a different state, he was going to harass you. He was going to stalk you. He would find you.
Yeah, and get what he want, too, which in this case, it's your kid.
Mm-hmm.
Sinisterhood will be right back. Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
In June of 1973, Trina's son was born. She wanted to name him Jerome, but McElroy already had a son named Jerome and forced her to call the baby Jeffy instead. Desperate to leave the man who she later told authorities,
"Hit me all the time,"
Trina sought help from her Aunt Brenda and uncle, Nottoway County Sheriff's Deputy Russ Johnson. Trina used the new baby, still in the hospital, as an excuse to leave the house with Alice and Alice's two children. Instead of going to the hospital, they all headed for Brenda and Russ's. After dropping off the kids, Trina's stepfather, Ronnie, drove Trina and Alice to the hospital to see the newborn. By then, McElroy had figured out they were gone. He roamed the town until he found them and forced the girls and children back home at gunpoint.
This whole scenario is like a horror film. Like, he found out that they had gone, figured that, you know, where else are they going to run to is the deputy's house. I think Alice was over it by this point because she was obviously ready to run as well. I mean, he shot her stepfather in the leg or whatever. It's like, you can't, again, you see, he's going to beat me. He's never going to get in trouble. He shot my dad and he's still fine. So yeah. I think they're ready to go. And so they're hiding, you know, in the house. Of course, Brenda and Russ are like, we have kids too.
but okay, if you, that's fine, bring him in here. So he pulls, McElroy literally pulls over Ronnie driving with Trina and Alice. It's like a cop. Like, Ken McElroy pulls up behind you with a shotgun, you pull your car over, and is like, all right, this is how it's going to go. And essentially, at gunpoint, forces them back, gets the kids, they all go back to his house. I'm like, this man is, the amount of felonies he's committing just in, you know, the way that the folks from the town tell it, they're kind of like, well, you know, he was all riled up, and then he went and got a gun and got this. I'm like, that's kidnapping, false imprisonment, assault with a deadly, another count of assault with a deadly. Like, it's wild that he did this, but he ended up getting them back to the house and taught them, was like, I'm going to teach you a lesson for this.
He uses guns like most people would, I don't know, send a nasty text if they were mad. Yeah. Like, it's just like, he doesn't even take it serious. It's just so like knee jerk, and he does it so often that it's crazy how it's just like his natural thing. It's like, well, he get pissed off, so he shot somebody. It's like, what? You can't do that.
Yeah. It's giving like Wild Wild West vibe, just kind of like old. This was kind of the era of just the area of like Jesse James, you know, a couple generations back. So that idea of having this like cowboy in the plains, and he's like Bad Bart coming through town, and everyone's afraid of him. It's like, well, then you need a sheriff who's going to stand up to Bad Bart, because otherwise he's just going to go around with a shotgun and get his way all the time.
Until somebody takes care of him.
Till he don't.
At home, McElroy savagely attacked both women for escaping, threatening to kill them with a gun and breaking Alice's cheekbones and brow. McElroy then raped 15-year-old Trina at gunpoint, just 16 days after she had given birth. He also set her parents' home on fire. Trina watched as he doused the place in gasoline, then flicked a cigarette to start the blaze. With their home gone, Trina's parents were forced to move 20 miles away, but they eventually left the area entirely due to continued harassment from McElroy.
So that happens to your daughter. Your house gets burned down. You move away just 20 miles, so you're at least still in range to see your grandchild. And he still drives by your house and drives by late at night, shines in the window, gives you menacing stares. It's like, I can't even be in the same state anymore.
Yeah, it's any of these things is so much. But and then you compound them all into like in a 24-hour period, all of these things happen. I understand the parents moving. It's really hard for me to know that they know how he is, and they know their daughter is with him and their grandson. And they still, I mean,
they got three other kids too.
I'm not doing it. I'm not going to leave her behind, or I'm going to get her out of there one way or another. At least try. Like, I know that people were trying, but like, try harder or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if somebody had my kid held hostage basically and was raping her and forcing her to have babies, I'm getting her the fuck out of there somehow.
Yeah. I think it was hard for them, much like it is with like in a cult where you see her on the street and you're like, Trina, can we help you? And it's like, I'm in love now. I'm married and I have a baby. And you're like, no, you have to come home. And it's like, but I love Ken now. And you're like, oh God. Like,
he's her brain 37.
Is gone. Yeah, it's like her brain is gone. And that's what people said. You know, she used to be kind of like meek and mild and stuff early on. And they just sort of, you see it get stolen from her.
Yeah.
You know, but little by little.
Oh, they were for sure completely shells of who they were, which is so hard to think about. She's 15. Yeah. She's barely begun her life. And what little she's experienced has been pretty shitty from the jump.
And meanwhile, Alice, I mean, to have both of your cheekbones and your brow bone, God. But he had a shotgun in her face, and they got back. He essentially held him at shotgun behind the barn and said, if any police come chasing after us, essentially, if your aunt and uncle call, like Deputy Johnson or anybody comes over here, I'm going to kill you, kill them, and then kill myself. Maybe just kill you and kill them. I don't know. But you're going first. His big thing would say, I'm going to start shooting at your feet and shoot all the way up to your head. But he never did that I saw. But it's certainly a visual, and it's very scary. Indeed, in a quite easy way, if you're a bully who doesn't want to kill anyone, to like shoot someone in the foot and be like, see, I'm serious. But he chose not to shoot them and just broke Alice's face and then sent her away. And then, held Trina at gunpoint.
Trina sought medical help for her injuries, and her doctor reported the abuse to juvenile authorities. Deputies interviewed Trina, who described the horrors she had endured. She was placed in a mental health hospital for her safety. On June 19, 1973, McElroy was charged with rape, arson, and brandishing a weapon based on Trina's statements to authorities. Afraid of arrest, McElroy and Alice fled town.
They left the Alice's kids with McElroy with his sister, too. And, like, the cops, very smart, were like, we're going to go and take the children. And they said, call your brother and tell him he's abandoned his kids. And we're taking him to, like, CPS, essentially. We're going to take him and put him in foster care if he doesn't get back to town. And, of course, he got all pissed off, came back to town, and that's where they were able to, like, arrest him finally.
After the hospital, Trina and Jeffy were placed in the foster home of Ginger and George Clement and their two teenage daughters. Trina remained indoors with the baby for weeks, terrified McElroy would return. One day, Ginger came home to find McElroy sitting outside in his car, waiting. A terrified Trina was hiding in the basement. Having seen him out the window, she was convinced he would kill her and take her baby. She told Ginger that McElroy had been lurking outside for over 4 hours.
Yeah, they said if she caught a glimpse of the window and thought there was movement out there, she would, like, hit the deck, panic, and be like, he's gonna get me, he's gonna get me. And then one day, it really is him. Like, yeah. You thought every day he's gonna be out that window one day, and there he fucking is. And he would stay just far enough away. Just far enough away that it's not, he's on public property, or if the cops would come, he would open the hood of his car and be like, well, I wasn't going to stop here, but my car was having problems, but it seems to be working now, so I'll get going. Like, just every time would have an excuse.
And that little bit of, I know where you are, just, I always know where you are, so you're not safe. And you're just living in constant fear. You can't go out of the house. The Clements began receiving threatening and harassing phone calls from McElroy, demanding that they return
my little bride
back to him. He threatened the couple's children and continued lurking in front of the house day after day. Trina grew close to Ginger and George's teenage daughters during this time. She seemed to take an interest in normal things like makeup and school gossip. But Trina rarely ventured outside and was never left alone for fear of McElroy.
Yeah, it's... The thing that gets me is, like, she sounded like she was coming out of it. Like, Ginger's like, she wanted to talk to my daughters. At one point, she would confide in Ginger and start talking to her kind of like a mother figure and kind of be like, tell me what happened. And, of course, your jaw is on the floor when you have this 15, 16-year-old describing every possible heinous thing. And she's like, well, you know, he can't hurt you anymore. And when she found out the house burned down, Ginger said, you know, do you want to see it? Like, do you... as closure. And Ginger took her there and said Trina, like, walked the literal just foundation. It was burned to, like, the foundation, and kind of walked around and was like, that used to be my room and that used to be my window. And she said kind of just seeing this, her accepting the reality of what this man had done to her, and she's healing, right? It's like she deserves to be a teenager.
For sure. Of course. She's already a teenage mom. So to add on top of that, like, you can't even go out and have some fun. And of course she wants to hear the school gossip. That's what she wants to be doing, is going to high school and putting on makeup and doing all those things.
Right. You see George and Ginger's kids, like, going to a dance, and you're like, what was it like? Like, was it fun? But in those phone calls, he didn't say it was him ever, by the way. He would, because plausible deniability, but he would say, like, just give me my little bride back and everything will be okay. How about we do a girl swap? We'll just do a girl swap one day. And they're like, what's that? And the implication was, I'm going to kidnap one of your daughters and I'll get Trina back some way. We'll swap them. How about that? So then you're like, well, now I don't worry about my own kids.
Yeah. McElroy was indicted for 11 felony charges, but his defense attorney succeeded in getting the charges bifurcated and venues changed. The rape, assault, arson, and weapons charges proceeded together in one county, while the sexual abuse charges were moved to another. Both cases received multiple continuances, delaying proceedings for nearly 2 years. In preparation for the trial, Trina was moved from the foster home and sent to live with her grandparents. But the pressure was too much. After 2 years isolated, a weary, lonely Trina reached out to McElroy to come get her from her grandparents.
Which, that's got to be such a gut punch. Ginger always told folks, like, if I would have had a little bit more time with her, she would have stayed with us instead of her grandparents. we think she would not have gone back to him. But it's like, you know, coulda, woulda, shoulda, right?
But why pull her out of where she's thriving to prepare her for trial? She's already doing well where she is. So I didn't really understand that.
Yeah, I didn't either. And it's one of those where, you know, it might just be the mechanisms of the court system back in the, you know, late 1970s of, okay, well, we have a blood relative, so we're going to move her there, because then as soon as and you're like, oh, well, but she's doing well. And it's like, we don't have time to talk about why. We're just moving her. So,
and also, if the grandparents could take her, why didn't they take her from the beginning?
Yeah. I think it's, you know, one of those questions that her grandparents were either couldn't or, you know, whatever, but they were obviously not prepped, because they weren't told, like, don't give her a phone. Like, don't let her, because you don't know if she answers it one day and it's like, hello, my little bride, or whatever. So I think those kind of situations, you look back and go, what the fuck were you doing at the time? Generally speaking, a blood relative would be better than just some rando. But in this case, the randos were a really nice family who were trying their best. And I think, you know, making a good home for her and her kid.
Yeah. Now she's with family, but they're older. They're not going to be able to physically protect her as much. Mm-hmm. They're more vulnerable. And he knew that. And he, all that stalking, she eventually couldn't take it anymore.
Right.
To get out of the criminal charges, McElroy decided he would first divorce Sharon, who he married a decade earlier when she was just 15, to prevent her from testifying against him for shooting her with a shotgun. Then he would marry 15-year-old Trina to prevent her from testifying against him in the pending cases. Because of Trina's age, her mother signed consent forms to approve the union. Trina then executed a sworn statement recanting all of her prior allegations. Charges were dropped, and McElroy once again walked free.
Yeah, in Harry McLean's book, he says that Trina was promised that McElroy wouldn't have any other girlfriends, meaning he would stop seeing Alice, that Trina would become, like, woman number one. Didn't quite happen. Like, Alice gave birth, I think, 11 months after Trina was let out, you know, or not Trina was let out, but after they got married. So it's like,
math isn't mathing.
No, but I think that's what she was promised of, like, you know, you're going to be my one and only, and you're going to be my wife. And I think for Alice, she was like, bye. Like, he's like, you got to understand. And she's like, I understand everything. It sounds great. And I will be leaving with the children. I'm going to go be a hairdresser like two towns over, which is what she did. I'm like, good for you, girl. Get out. Because I think after your entire face is broken and it's been like 10 years, I think she was just ready to raise her kids.
God, somewhere. Understandably so. But yeah, that constant love bombing that he would do, you know, to get Trina back. And then, of course, within minutes, the abuse starts back, you know?
Yeah, I can't imagine he was just, I mean, maybe he's sweet for a day. And the other thing is, like, just because they were married did not mean that she couldn't testify against him at all. She would not have been able to testify against him in other crimes. But in Missouri, there's an exception that she's not prohibited from testifying about crimes committed by her spouse against her. Like, there's not a, you can't ever tell anybody, even if the crime is against you. It's like, if it is against you, you can speak up. But I think that the district attorney was probably like, it is very hard for me to prosecute an abuse and a rape case when the victim has now married the perpetrator two years later, or like 18
months later. And recanted statements.
Yes. In a very clearly, this girl dropped out of school in eighth grade. 100% McFadden wrote that for her. I mean, you could just tell it's like exactly what it needed to say to get the charges dropped. And McFadden was very happy to do this. The defense attorney was, I think, very much like, in your face, DA, he got away again. And I'm like, stop encouraging your clients to do crime, you sack of shit.
Yeah. I mean, what makes you think you're immune from this? You piss him off, he's coming straight to you and for your family, too.
So I'm always like, you better keep getting him off. Otherwise, he's going to kill you. Maybe that's why McFadden was like, I'm going to do every dirty trick because I literally can't lose this case. But honestly, I think it was money. He got paid handsomely from Ken McElroy, and I think he honestly probably liked winning a little bit too. Sinisterhood will be right back. Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Despite being acquitted of nearly a dozen charges, McElroy's behavior remained unchanged. On July 27, 1976, McElroy and an accomplice were firing shots near Romaine Henry's 1,000-acre farm outside Skidmore. Romaine had lived and worked on the farm all his life. He was working in his shed when his son reported the sounds. Around 5:30 p.m., Romaine jumped in his truck to investigate. Romaine saw McElroy's truck stopped on a dirt road by his fence. Having heard the stories about McElroy, Romaine decided it was best to turn around. McElroy jumped into the road, waving a shotgun, so Romaine stopped his truck. McElroy walked up to Romaine's truck, opened the passenger door, and demanded to know if Romaine had been sitting in a car outside McElroy's house. Romaine was confused and said no. McElroy then accused him of lying before pumping his shotgun and shooting Romaine directly in the stomach at point-blank range.
One day, you're just in your shed, and your son's like, "Daddy, I think I heard a sound." And you're like, "Okay, I'll go see what the sound is." And literally less than 10 minutes later, you have an 8-inch, like, gaping, huge cannonball shot in your gut. It busted a hole in the panel of the truck. Like, it blew through this man's abdominal wall. Mm-hmm. At point blank range for something you don't even know what he's talking about.
Yeah. You're like, what? You came to my house. Why do you think I was at your house? You're the one over at my house.
It was like, I wonder, because they did say McElroy kept a bunch of speed around his house and he would give speed. Mm. People didn't say they saw him taking it, but that he would give it to the people that he would have go steal stuff on his behalf to like stay up all night to go steal stuff. So I was like, maybe he was on it and people just didn't know. Because I'm like, this sounds like the ramblings of a crazy person. He's like, mm-hmm. "Why were you outside my house in a Buick?" And Romaine Hendry's like, "Bitch, I'm a farmer. I drive a truck. Like, what are you talking about? I'm like at home with my wife, Sarah, and our kids." Like, but you're out of nowhere. Your life has changed. Like, you just get blasted in the gut because you have a loose criminal just wandering the streets, doing whatever they want.
I would not be shocked or surprised to find out he was doing speed or other drugs. I mean, he's a complete loose cannon.
Yeah.
Before Romaine could drive away, McElroy tried shooting him again. Romaine ducked and managed to put the truck in gear as the bullets grazed his face. Out his window, he heard McElroy attempting to rack the gun a third and final time. Romaine sped off and made it home just moments before losing consciousness. Later, at the hospital, doctors stitched up the wounds on his face and repaired the enormous hole in his abdomen. In total, they removed 7 pellets from his abdomen wall.
That is, and later on, he had to go back to the hospital because it got infected. It's like, you're a farmer too. You can't go, "Well, I'll take 6 weeks off for sick leave." It's like immediately, you're like, "Well, I'm the one that's got to run the bean combine because no one else is going to run it." So you can't even like rest and recuperate. And you're not rich to pay fucking hospital bills. I imagine you probably don't have a bunch of insurance. So this is a person that's just destroying lives for no reason.
Yeah, just to be a horrible menace. Yeah. I am shocked that he survived this, honestly.
Right?
Yeah.
It's quite
a miracle that he did.
To get blasted by a shotgun, you're sitting in the driver's seat and someone's just leaning over the passenger seat with a gun. They said his stomach was burnt. The skin, there was like blast marks. Like that's how point blank the shotgun was. And thank God he ducked the second time. He's like, essentially was trying to put his car in gear and like managed to catch out of his eye that he was like about to shoot him again. And I think it jammed. Yeah, it jammed on the third time. It wasn't like, "Oh, the gun went off. Man, I shouldn't have done it." It was like, "Now I'll get his face." I mean, he's a murderer. I mean, would be attempted. This is attempted murder for me.
McElroy was arrested for assault with the intent to kill or do great bodily harm and was let out on bond. The career criminal claimed he was innocent and told police he was at his house with men he had hired to help with a home repair project. The two men, McElroy's drinking buddies from a bar across state lines, confirmed that he had been with them. However, two other, unrelated witnesses told police they saw McElroy speeding away from Romaine's farm just after the shooting.
And that's kind of the issue, is that the unrelated witnesses are locals who live there, one of whom was a farmhand on Romaine's farm, the other one was a neighbor, and they knew Ken McElroy drove the green truck. Like, everyone knew it was Ken's truck. They knew what he looked like because of his big sideburns. So they knew at like 5:30, 5:40 on this day that he was like, and he almost tumped the truck. He was taking a turn so fast. And so it's like, the neighbors are like, that's crazy that Ken's driving so fast. I wonder where he's going or what he must have done. But they saw him. And then, of course, mm-hmm. he just tells his two friends, like, if anyone asks, we were together from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. on this day. And the people
drinking
are like,
the whole time.
Yes. We were putting up a new wall at the house or whatever. Like, whatever it was, swear to God, we're with me. And they're like, yeah, absolutely, we will. So now, as from a cop's perspective, you're like, well, we have literally the exact amount of witnesses on either side mm-hmm. saying what happened. Because he knew he couldn't say, well, I wasn't even there because Romaine Henry was alive.
Right.
Like, it was definitely Ken McElroy with the gun in my gut. Like, I was there.
Yeah. I mean, not only did the witnesses see it, the neighbors, but you're the person you shot, the victim, can talk. And he's like, yeah, it was Ken that shot me in the stomach. Like, there's no question about it.
He looked me in the face and asked me a crazy question and then shot me in the gut. Yeah. That was the, I think Ken's biggest problem was that I think I shot someone in the gut. They're going to probably bleed out before they make it. And by whatever, the grace of God, and Romaine Henry's like really strong will to live, I guess. I don't know how you make it. But he drove himself home and then walked up to his house and was like, take me to the hospital.
Pure adrenaline. The fact that he keeps getting let out on bond really sends me. Like, just keep his ass there. You're the police. Put him in a jail cell. Lock it up. And throw away the key. He doesn't have a gun in jail. Just let his ass sit there for a while.
I think you're right. And I think it was a three-pronged approach of like, McFadden would ask and do everything in the possible legal book slash maybe bend the ethics a little bit to get him out. And if that didn't work, McElroy would be like, hey, send a couple of the boys, not to McFadden, but to like his wife or anybody, send a couple of the boys over to the judge's house. Like, there were times that judges or district attorneys, law enforcement officials be like, go ask him how old his daughter is. Like that kind of thing of just like menacing and intimidating. And then people are like, oh, they're like, we don't, it's fine. You can just, you're out on bond. That's okay. And it's like, we have a system specifically designed to protect citizens and not to be manipulated. But at every turn, he figured out what levers to pull. He knew what to do.
Yeah, one guy is defeating this entire town and law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible that he has been able to do so much damage and continues to just be let go. The tactics he uses to keep himself getting bonded out all the time are bullying tactics. And it pisses me off that they just wouldn't all be like, you know what? We can band together as a group. We are greater than this man, and we'll get him off the streets.
It makes you wonder. I mean, it is, from a law enforcement perspective, they had a single marshal who was an elected official in the town of, there's about 400 people that live in Skidmore, and that single marshal, the government wouldn't even give him a gun. They're like, you have to provide your own gun. We'll provide you with bullets and enough gas for your car. But it's like a super poor town. There's really no other way to put it. They did not have resources. There wasn't a ton of tax revenue. The county sheriff had like four or five cities. So he had to patrol like an entire county area. So you just see that when you're much like Ted Bundy in the 70s, we have these people that in retrospect were like, this guy must have been a crazy machine and such a genius that he did all these things. It's like, no, we see in retrospect that we all were living under a really tenuous system. Mm-hmm. And when you find a person who's like, oh, there are a bunch of holes around here. And everyone's like, well, yeah, but like, we all like to live in a society. So we don't go through. He's like, I'm going to go through all of them and then blow it up and then take all the money. It's like, well, what do we do now? Because he's not abiding by anything that we all agreed to abide by. Like, what do we do? Well, that's what they asked themselves.
What do you do?
Yeah.
McElroy's defense attorney repeatedly delayed the trial, allowing his client to torment the Henry family. McElroy would drive by the Henry farm, peel out, and kick up gravel. He would also shine a spotlight into Romaine and his wife's bedroom at night. McElroy's harassment was so severe that one witness who saw him speeding moved his family to Florida, and the other witness separated from his wife.
Because you're right, you have the townspeople going, hey, you guys can do the right thing here. You got to go and testify. And Ken McElroy is like, I'll skin your children in front of you. And then you're the witness going, what do I do? And everyone's like, come on, man, this is our one chance. You know Romaine's not making this up. You know he's not lying. And then the people are like, I can't do this. I just have to go to Florida. And then another one did testify. So, you know, you at least have someone trying to testify. Yeah.
But also they know what's really the point, because
what's going to happen?
Testify and he's been let out like 50 times at this point. So you've lost all faith in the police. Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Romaine Henry's just got his hand on his gut going, I will see this through to the end. I'm ready to be... which sucks because he couldn't go and like just farm his land because mm-mm. you would just have Ken McElroy driving up and down making like menacing gestures at you, shooting a gun just in the air near you, near your kids playing. It was so much that the cops are like, or not the cops, the sheriffs are like, oh, is it him again? Oh, okay. Well, we'll come back by. Well, of course, by the time they got there, he was gone.
Yeah. If you've survived a shotgun blast to the stomach, I also would be like, I'm seeing this through to the end. If mm-hmm. it kills me, okay. I've already cheated death once, so right. We'll see how it goes. Exactly. At least I would bring him down with me.
Mm-hmm.
Over a year after the shooting, on August 2nd, 1977, Ken McElroy stood trial for shooting Romaine Henry. Due in part to the defense's dirty tricks, like withholding alibi witnesses until the trial date, McElroy was acquitted. According to In Broad Daylight, the newly emboldened rural terrorist was bragging about the shooting after getting off, going around Skidmore saying things like,
I thought I had the bastard shot deep enough that he would die before he got home. I'm just saying, you feel bold that you're going around telling people, well, I really thought I killed him. That's yeah. why we even had to have a trial. It's really annoying. I won't make that mistake twice.
He's much like the residents have been shown, the cops and judges mm-hmm. aren't going to do anything. He also knows that. So yeah. he, like a kid that keeps not getting in trouble for doing something. Okay, they're going to keep doing it. So, I mean, there's really no consequences for him no matter what he does. So he can openly brag about these crimes and he's still like, but I'm untouchable.
It really was. As long as he kept Mr. McFadden's bills paid, I think he knew he was probably pretty good. He was sitting mm-hmm. pretty. And no witness, no crime, right? You have a witness, I'll have one of my own, and then we'll see. Well, and also for Romaine Henry's part of it, he was like, you know, I can't do more than what I did. I know the yeah. truth. I went to court. I presented my case. The district attorney did as best she could with what she could do because, like I said, on purpose, because you normally would get to depose these alibi witnesses. Amy Davis, who's the district attorney, she would have been able to see right through his drinking buddies and been like, okay, here's the reason why we can poke holes in this. Well, she wasn't told that they existed. McFadden withheld those from her until the day of and was like, oh, well, I put them on the witness list. I only just found them, Your Honor. I knew where, like, kind of that they had been there, but we couldn't get a hold of them because they lived in Iowa. Sorry, Your Honor. And the judge is like, well, we can't delay this trial anymore. We've already delayed it 2 years. So sorry, Miss District Attorney, you're going to have to just wing it. And so she's like, great. Well, that was done unethically and on purpose, mm-hmm. but I can't literally do anything but try my best. So I think for Romaine Henry, he's like, we've all gotten railroaded by the system, but at least yeah. I got to say my piece. And now, yeah. hopefully, now Ken McElroy will just leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
Sinister Hood will be right back. Sinister Hood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
The residents of Skidmore grew even more afraid, for good reason. As Romaine was harvesting beans one afternoon, months after the trial, McElroy came up to him with a rifle in hand. Romaine ignored the bully and climbed onto his combine to continue his work. A bullet whizzed by Romaine's head, but he didn't flinch. McElroy drove off, and Romaine, defeated after the last encounter with the law's impotence, did not report the incident to police.
Which, why would you? You're like, well, he actually shot my guts out last time and he got off. What do you think they're going to do when a bullet didn't even touch me?
To not flinch when a bullet's going by. This man is just at the, he's so over having to deal with this sack of shit that it's like, if it gets me, it gets me. I'm living my life and I can't, you don't want to stay locked in your house all the time. You can't. You're a farmer. First of all, you have to get out. So it sucks. But like you said, there's no one to help them. So he knows that he's going to get away with it. After her husband's acquittal, 20-year-old Trina was caring for 6 children at the McElroy farmhouse. Her 3 children, Jeffy, a daughter named Alita, a third child named Reno, and 3 of Ken's daughters with Sharon, Tammy, Tina, and Debbie, who had left their mother's house in Florida to live in Skidmore permanently. Lois and Beau Bowenkamp bought the only grocery store in Skidmore in 1972. Lois was a tough, no-nonsense woman, 20 years younger than her 69-year-old husband. On April 25th, 1980, while their teenage employee, Evelyn, was working the register, a tense situation unfolded. 2 of McElroy's daughters entered, preteen Debbie and preschool-age Alita. Debbie paid for a few things, but the younger girl tried to leave with candy they hadn't paid for. After Evelyn pointed it out, the preteen angrily returned the items. Not long after, the girl's older sister, Tammy, stormed in demanding a refund, accusing the store of mistreating her sisters. Lois came from the back and attempted to calm the situation, but tensions escalated, leading to a bitter exchange. Tammy vowed that her family would never shop there again.
And that's kind of like Lois Bowenkamp was like in the back going, what is going on? And then she comes out and she's like, I think we can handle this. Like, because Lois was like, Evelyn is panicking because she's a teenager. She's being screamed at by a teenager. Let's all just take a beat. What exactly happened? And Tammy was not having it and was like, you accused my sisters of raiding the store. Why did you accuse my sisters of raiding the store? And it, of course, because she's a teenager and shouldn't just be loose. Again, the parentification of children. She should not be loose in charge of a preteen and a 4-year-old. Driving a truck, by the way, because then after she's like, we're never going to shop here again. And then run out to the, got to the truck. And then Lois was like, was that the McElroy girls? I think that was. I think one of them might have gone to school with my daughter. I'm not sure. And so Lois opens the door to like make sure that that's them. Well, Tammy sees her look and her father's daughter's like, what the fuck are you looking at? You want to fucking fight me? And then starts coming back over there. And it's like, this is because a 4-year-old picked up a jawbreaker and some candy. And Evelyn was like doing her job, which is, oh, you have to pay for those, please. Like,
what? It shows you, too, how clearly things are at home.
Yes.
Because all of the kids think the way you deal with conflict or anything is by violently threatening people and fighting. It's, you know, there's no happy resolution when it comes to them.
Nobody wanted to listen and try to de-escalate. It was, I'm going to scream, threaten, and get my way. And if I don't get my way, I will seek revenge.
Just like their father.
Yep.
Later, a knife-wielding McElroy arrived with Trina, who launched a vulgar tirade at Lois and Evelyn. Despite the threats and intimidation, Lois stood her ground, insisting that neither McElroy nor his family were welcome back at the store. McElroy twisted the story in different versions to friends, accusing the store staff of mistreating his children and refusing their business. Despite the encounter, Lois felt justified in her actions, knowing she had acted fairly, even though McElroy's presence left a lingering sense of unease, given his history.
Yeah, I think if Kim McElroy and Trina come in and holler at you, you can't just go like, well, that's probably the end of that. Like, no. Again, they're revenge people.
Yeah, and you're well aware of it, too.
Mm-hmm. You're like, this store's probably going to get burned down. Like, on, he likes to burn stuff down. Mm-hmm. Like, he's
shot
pissed
up.
Yeah, or something. Like, he's going to come back with a corn knife. Like, mm-hmm. something's going to happen.
McElroy began a new campaign of terror, this time directed at the Bowen camps. He would linger outside the store in their home, sitting and watching them. He would even fire off a shotgun outside their home. Sometimes he would stalk them every day for weeks. Then he wouldn't be seen for a few days, only to turn up again later, terrifying the family all over again.
I'm like, bitch, get a job. What are you doing sitting outside my house all day? You fucking roused about? Go get a fucking job and work the land like the rest of us. We're all trying to run a store,
yeah.
run a tavern. We're all trying. You're sitting on your ass making faces at people, you lazy piece of shit.
Yeah, how am I going to be over at your place when I'm working? You're just yeah. stealing cattle, I guess, still to get yes. money. How he's getting money to
still
keep paying for the legal fees is just
stealing
robbery.
Yeah, everything. Anything. He would say, I'm an antiques dealer. Well, I mean, maybe, yeah, but like you didn't like buy and sell antiques. You just sell the stolen antiques.
So, yeah, or you just sell a bunch of old shit out of your house and you're yeah. like, this is an antique. Well, yeah, everybody could be an antique dealer then.
He go, I'm a hog farmer. I'm a hog farmer. They're like, well, we're all farmers and we see you don't have like a proper barn. You don't have fencing. You don't have storage. The hogs you have are magically arrive huge already because they're stolen from somewhere and then mm-hmm. get sold a few days later. So you're not. Mm-hmm. But he would, if you challenged him, he would threaten to shoot you in the face. Yeah. So.
Each time Lois reported the incidents, law enforcement told her there was nothing they could do, and that if the police were to speak to McElroy, it would only rile him up further. Feeling hopeless, afraid, and isolated, Lois bought a gun for protection. Her daughter Cheryl told interviewers, and no one saw a thing, that her family previously believed the law would be on their side. But at that point,
we're pretty much on our own.
To have the cops tell you, it's best not to rile him up. Like, the putting the onus back on the victims. The police are doing this. Like, we know he's a menace. We can't do anything.
Yes.
It's like, well, we all know Billy hits when he's upset. So, children, nobody approach Billy because it's like, Billy needs to be removed from the situation. He's the problem here.
Yeah, like, we're not the ones that are the problem here. But, yeah, that's what, and I think it just sort of shows you the cops started getting fed up with him and like, ugh, this guy again. But they're like, we can never catch him anyway. Nothing's going to happen to him. He's going to be pissed off. He would threaten police's family. Oh, it's you again. Huh. Hi, Officer Smith. How's your daughter? How's little Tara? Is she growing into a young girl? Like that kind of stuff.
Gross.
And they're like, you know what? You can just go ahead and go, man. It's fine. It's like that where mm-hmm. he's now got everybody on lock. So I'm sure if you're the Bowen camps or their daughter, Cheryl, you're just like, oh my God, he's going to kill all of us. Like they don't care.
No, I would go out and buy a gun too. Maybe a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
July 8th, 1980 was Bo Bowenkamp's 70th birthday. Still nervous about the family's run-ins with McElroy, there was no usual birthday party. Instead, Bo spent the day at the store. That afternoon, McElroy, after drinking at a local tavern, parked his truck across from the store and watched Bo as he cleaned up the loading dock around back. As evening approached, Bo returned to the store to meet an electrician and noticed McElroy lingering again, this time with a shotgun in his hand. According to Bo, McElroy walked up to him as he sat on the loading dock and demanded,
"Do you want to fight?"
Bo replied calmly that he had no reason to fight. When Bo turned his face away, McElroy held up the double-barrel shotgun and fired. The blast struck Bo in the neck, and he collapsed. Earlier, McElroy had seen a few teens lingering around the tavern across the street. He had given them $5 to go inside so there wouldn't be witnesses. The boys burst out of the tavern after hearing the blast and found Bo on the dock, bleeding out from his neck. They rushed for help, alerting the tavern staff and finding the town marshal, David Dunbar. As Dunbar and others arrived, they found Bo in critical condition, bleeding heavily and struggling to speak. According to In Broad Daylight, Bo lied there, gravely injured, repeating,
"I'm dying. I know I'm dying." He was also saying what they thought was Lois for Lois. But then Lois heard, she got there, rushed up to the store to find her husband bleeding, gurgling, swallowing blood, bleeding profusely blood from the throat and neck, which I would think, if I was shot in the neck with a shotgun, I would think I was dying too.
Because oh, 100%.
Such a major.
Yeah.
But as he was laying there going, Lois, Lois, she's like, he's saying McElroy. She's like, I can hear him say McElroy. And David Dunbar's like, we know it was him, man. Stop talking. Like, save your strength. He was just really like, I know, I'm gonna tell you who did it. And they're like, shh, just try to live, please. Like, you're literally bleeding from the neck.
On your 70th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Bo miraculously survived the shooting and went back to work not long after. Lois chided law enforcement, insisting the assault was entirely preventable if they had done something about McElroy. Their daughter Cheryl told filmmakers she and her parents began living in constant fear after that event. They felt even more hopeless after McElroy menaced the town marshal into quitting after threatening his family, too.
And that's like, it doesn't, you can't even keep a cop around here. He also, after he shot, Bo was driving around town with a machine gun and the gun rack on the back of his truck. Like, not even just like a rifle. It was a full machine gun. Mm-hmm. And Cheryl Bowenkamp's just like walking to her parents' store. First of all, you see Kim McElroy's truck. I'm sure your heart falls out of your ass because you're just like, God, no, he's back. And then that's not just a shotgun like the one that killed my dad. It's a full fucking machine gun.
Mm-hmm. However, newly hired district attorney for Nottoway County, David Baird, was not intimidated by McElroy. He later admitted that at just 5 years out of law school, he was perhaps more naive than brave. He saw to it that McElroy was charged with first-degree assault with a deadly weapon, a charge for which he faced up to life in prison. McElroy continued the harassment of the Bowenkamps, mirroring what he had done to the Henry family. He drove by their home, the store, and wherever they were walking or driving around town. He had Trina and other girlfriends drive trucks to their property at night and shine their headlights into the Bowenkamps' windows. Meanwhile, McElroy prepared for his upcoming trial by attempting to take out a hit on Bo. He also tried hiring someone to intimidate the future jurors, the plan being to put rattlesnakes in their mailboxes. Most effective of all, McElroy convinced a few witnesses to lie for him, claiming the 70-year-old grocery store owner with a heart condition had first attacked McElroy with a knife.
Yeah, throwing spaghetti at the wall. Yeah, trying to. It was the same with Romaine Henry. He said, well, you know, people in town, he was telling him, well, we were sleeping with the same woman. So that's why he tried to come at me. So that's why I shot him, even though I wasn't there. But also this, he just made up these like wild stories. Just
lies,
because
lies, lies.
It makes me think, you know, certain people that have the ability to lie on a large scale said, you know, lie so much. If you lie so much, people don't know what the truth is.
True.
And he would do that. And also having, you know, Trina became like Bonnie and Clyde with him.
Yeah.
Like they were just like, people around town were like, she's just like a mini Ken. Like she would also intimidate. So if he wasn't around and she's driving through town and you see her, she's like making a face at you. And you're like, well, I can't be like, fuck you, lady. Don't make a face at me. Cause you know, I don't know, 5 minutes, 5 days, 5 years later, her husband's going to come and kill me. Mm-hmm. So she became an extension of him and just had this like kind of gruff voice, started sort of sounding like him. You know, her whole family was gone. He wouldn't let her see them or call them anyway. So it became this true, like, isolated, folie à deux. Like, he was, of course, I'm going to be your number one. He's still cheating on her, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, she's becomes what her family, I'm sure, was afraid, which was not only just a victim, but also kind of an accomplice.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't know any better. And she, you know, that's all she can do to survive is to please him, and he loves himself more than anything. So if you're like him, he'll love it.
That's what I was going to say. She's in complete survival mode too. I mean, she's being forced to commit these crimes and do these things. She knows better than anybody what he's capable of. So if you have nowhere to go, then to stay where you're staying, you got to do it, you know, whatever you got to do to keep yourself alive. At some point though, you do cross the line, like we talk about, from being a victim to also a perpetrator.
And that's what I was going to say, too, because it was strange that friend Vicky that we talked about earlier, Vicky's job, guess where she ended up working? In the sheriff's office. That's right. She was like the secretary for the sheriff's office. And Trina stayed in contact with her secretly. She would, anytime they were at the sheriff's office, if Ken was in talking with someone, Trina would come over and be like, hey, how's it going? Like, hey, you know, he can't hear us talking or whatever. But they would like still talk to each other. And her kind of explanation was, he's good to me and he takes care of my kids. But I think the answer is, you know, there's nowhere else for me to go. But they, Ken and Trina, would frequent this bar called the Shady Lady that Ginger and George Clement, her former foster parents, owned. And they said, you know, later, like, Trina would act like she didn't know them and would act kind of tough and, you know, I'm Mrs. Ken McElroy. What are you going to do with me? And it was just kind of this weird, Ginger's like, she knew she stayed with me. Yeah. I knew she stayed with me. Ken knew she stayed with me. And we just didn't say anything.
We all pretended it didn't happen. I'm sure she's also very dependent on him financially. And with all those kids, you do feel like you have no choice but to stay with him.
Yeah. I mean, that's... But your question, I think you're right, though, is what we talk, that line we talk about of like, yeah, but also like your best friend's in the sheriff's office. Your uncle is a Nottoway County sheriff's deputy. Like there were some connections. Like at some point you like it. You like the power. You like the money. You like that you're Mrs. Ken McElroy and people jump out of your way on the street.
Perhaps so. Despite his efforts, McElroy was convicted on June 26, 1981. Of the 37 felonies McElroy had been charged with in his life so far, this was his first conviction. Jurors, with no knowledge of his prior acts, sentenced him to 2 years in jail. After the verdict was delivered, bailiffs told the jurors just who Ken McElroy was. According to In Broad Daylight, the jurors were angry. They felt deceived and wished they had given him at least 5 years in jail. McElroy appealed the conviction and was immediately released on bond. He saw no jail time, though at least he was no longer allowed to carry a weapon.
Yeah, this was a weird, in my opinion, not really weird, but it's kind of a loophole in Missouri law. They had 25 days after the trial to ask for a new trial and kind of say, these are the things that we think went wrong in the trial. And it would, if the... It was the next step on the way to a higher court of appeals appeal. And the way that Missouri law worked, at least at the time, was that the jury's decision was not final until the judge signed and made it official. So therefore, you're not really convicted. Like the jury came back with a guilty verdict, but the judge has to sign off and like affirm the verdict essentially. Well, he was still looking at the motion for new trial. So you have to file the motion for new trial within 25 days, but it could take 6 weeks, 6 months, a year for him to be able to see, especially if you are Mr. McFadden working on Ken's behalf and you want to keep your client out of jail for as long as possible. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of motions and continuances and whatever. So for all intents and purposes, Ken is a convicted felon now. But because of this procedural hickey that his attorney knew to take advantage of, he was allowed to walk right back in the town. And the thing about it is, everybody in the town is scared fucking shitless because they liked Bo Bowenkamp. They were like, this guy didn't deserve it. He was sitting out on his porch and he just got shot in the throat for literally nothing that he did wrong.
Can we also just interject that 2 years he was given for that? And then they're like, we wish we'd given him five. Five? You heard all the stuff he done and you're like, well, that's 5 years. That is a life sentence for half of the shit he's done.
The jury could have given him all the way up to life in prison. It sounded like they were just on knowing nothing about the defendant. We're like, this type of behavior, we think it should, yeah, about 2 years is fair. And then when they found out who he was, they were like, well, we should have at least given him five, like at least given him something more. Like, what were we thinking?
Those are still too low, guys. Mm-hmm. 12 of you really shit the bed on that one.
Right.
2 years for assault with a deadly weapon. People go to prison for weed for longer than 2 years.
Right. And I was going to say, it's one thing to say it's assault with a deadly weapon. We were 20 feet away and he shot at me with a shotgun. But when you place the muzzle of a shotgun to someone's stomach and fire and then go around town going, boy, I really wish I would have, I really thought I had killed him. To me, that is beyond, and that would be in the life imprisonment, at least like 25 years kind of range. But it's that's just the justice system, is that we want the jury to assess punishment on the crime that has been committed. I mean, you start to ask yourself, is it equitable to bring in someone's prior bad acts, where does it go to show a pattern and practice of behavior? In this case, I would think that people, mm-hmm. those people deserve to know who the fuck they were dealing with, but just for from their own safety perspective too. Sinister Hood will be right back. Sinister Hood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
A week after his acquittal, McElroy sat in the D&G Tavern with an M1 bayonet rifle, in what some townsfolk took as a sign that McElroy was ready to go to war. It was also a flagrant violation of his bond release conditions. Residents of Skidmore remained terrified, unable to relax as long as McElroy was on the loose. Beau and Lois's daughter Cheryl told documentarians from No One Saw a Thing,
"The town just emptied out every time he came to town. Everybody was so uncomfortable and scared. You just couldn't be sure what was going on in his mind."
Fed up with McElroy's reign of terror and repeated injustices by law enforcement, the townsfolk of Skidmore decided it was time to take matters into their own hands. So what do we think?
Yeah, I think if... just taking Cheryl's statement, you know, that everybody in town scattered, the tavern owners, you know, people would not want to be having a beer with him in there because, like you said, if you sneeze, he's like, "You sneezing at me, you motherfucker, I'll kill you." And you're like, what is happening? So it became super tense. Every time a crime was committed in town, everybody was like, it's probably Ken McElroy. Well, then, of course, he, his family, all of his children, which the children are now getting older.
And he has a lot of them.
20 almost children. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, he didn't do that, or his family members would be like, well, there's no way he could do all that crime. Well, it's like, well, yeah, but he at least did these crimes, like the ones that we talked about today. And in addition to this, like while he was going to trial for Beau Bonecamp, he was charged with like brandishing a weapon in another county for a road rage incident. So it wasn't like, well, I'm just being accused unfairly by my mm-hmm. neighbors. It was, these happened to be the ones that he actually got arrested for and that actually went to trial. The other ones didn't even go to trial because every time, no witness, no case, he would mm-hmm. intimidate someone. So we're seeing this boiling point where you're like, I can't even enjoy my town anymore. Like, I can't even go to the pumpkin festival downtown because he's going to be there. And he has beef now with everybody. He's got beef with Romaine Henry. He's got beef with the Bowenkamps. He's got beef with people whose car he, you know, cut them off. He's got everybody. It's like, how exhausting that you don't even work and all you do is go around and have fights with everybody all the time.
It, the comparison to the Wild Wild West really makes sense. Like there's no law. It's lawless. Mm-hmm. He rolls into town and it's like a ghost town because nobody wants to encounter him.
Yeah.
But eventually you're pushed to the brink. And if you're like, I refuse to live like this any longer and the cops aren't going to do anything, so we're all going to have a meeting.
Yeah. And that's what I think, even just like the sheriff in town is completely stretched thin. Like it takes 30 minutes for a sheriff's call to be answered because it's a one single sheriff for like a multi-town area. And even the deputy who they finally got a deputy, that guy quit because his family is. So you start asking the sheriff, like, what do we even do? And I think
he's
the sheriff's
like, I don't know.
Yeah.
If I knew, I'd do it.
Yeah. The sheriff's like, I don't know, man. Do you guys have any ideas? Let's all go have a meeting, which I think. Yeah. Is a great place to end part two, and we will pick it back up in part three with what they decide at that meeting and what comes next.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this Saturday, September 14th in Dallas at the Eric Johnson Library downtown, the main branch of the Dallas Public Library, I am presenting my journaling workshop in connection with Fearless Dallas's annual summit. If you haven't been, I highly recommend it. It's free for women and gender minorities in the DFW area looking to, it's like self-improvement. Last year, I did my journaling workshop, but then I selfishly also took workshops on like self-care, mental health, body
that's
balance.
That's not selfish.
Like, no, exactly.
That's self-care.
See? Exactly. And then I learned by going in those, going, hey, I should go to these.
Yeah.
Amazing keynote speakers. There's always something to learn, and it's really good networking. And there'll be like tables with different organizations, like local nonprofits or things that you might want to get in, involved with. Like A Sister's Legacy is a big part of Fearless, which provides no cost and low cost mental health services to folks through this nonprofit organization that's funded by selling jewelry, which there'll be some jewelry there as well. So be sure to check that out.
You know, I like jewelry.
Oh, I love a jewelry. But yeah, my journaling workshop, I'll be doing it for all y'all. And kind of the theme is, you know, carving out space for yourself, taking care of yourself. So I think journaling is a great way to do that. Mm-hmm. So again, that is this Saturday, September 14th. And it's like 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's totally free. Free to go. That's the whole point of Fearless, is that we want to bring really good resources to folks that need it the most in the community. And there's no catch. You don't have to join anything. You don't have to pay anything. I just do it because I want more people to journal, because I think if we're all taking time writing and reflecting on ourselves, the world will be a better place. So come on down, and you go to fearlessdallas.com for more information. But I'll see y'all there.
Yeah, that's amazing. Ella has started journaling, and in class, love even it. They have dedicated time to write down their little stories and journals and how they feel. And she got her first little journal with a key. So, but I think she's lost the key already, and it wasn't locked. So
hard relate. Hard. The amount of unlocked locking journals I have with no mm-hmm. keys, or the key is just like hooked to it. And I'm like, well, I can't lock it because I'd have to take the key off and then I would lose it. So, I feel you. Well, I love that. Get started early. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I can't wait to extol the virtues of journaling to anyone that will listen. So thank you absolutely. For letting me plug that. Appreciate it.
Go check it out.
There's one other event too on September 25th. For Fearless Dallas, it's a Wednesday night. It's Fearless Stories at the Happy Hippie in Dallas. Nice. And it's where folks come and tell stories about anything. It's either contemporaneous or they've prepared it. But it's a great way. If you want to sign up to tell a story too, they'll let you do that as well. So go check out their social media for more. But I think I'm going to try to go to that. It sounds fun. I went to one before, and this is a new location I'm excited to check out. So Happy Hippie. September 25th. We'll see y'all there.
Nice. Well, if you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next, or dive into over 900 hours of segments like Judge Christie, Am I the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, Heather's Saves, Dear Sinister, True Crime Headlines, and I think there's like four more that I'm just can't remember now.
We keep it fresh. And we just had an Unpopular Opinions that came out and that garnered a full ass long response from Tommy Brown, our wonderful producer. So don't miss that. That's free to read. If you just want to hear some exceptional writing about Stephen King's writing, as Paris said, great writing about great writing. We had
and
an
then did you see Tommy comment to Paris?
Yes. You got a Paris comment. It's very cute.
He said, a great writer telling me I'm a great writer about a great writer. I was like, can we all stop jerking each other off?
Keep doing it, fellas. Never. We love to see it. But yeah, so that's totally free. That's posted to all free members. And if you just join for free, you also get archive bonus content once a month as well. So that would be any one of our many bonus segments. But that's 100% free, not even just like the free trial, try it and then start to pay. It's free for life if you just want to be a free member and get that Tommy Brown hot Stephen King take.
It was great. If you want to do a free trial, you can join for a week at any of the tiers, check out all of the perks that are offered, and then cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged, or stick around for all the shenanigans and
so many.
All shenanigans is just how I'm going to describe it. And we have a true crime headlines coming up with some more recent information on cases that have been in the news lately, too.
Yeah, that'll be. Yeah, we've got a couple lined up for y'all. Not only that, you get ad-free episodes, monthly live streams, quarterly live bonus contents, all those weekly segments, monthly minisodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole entire internet.
For recent patrons, thank you so much for supporting the show, and make sure you stick around after our sign-offs to hear your shout-out.
Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out all of our merch, like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos. And be sure to use your Patreon discount that can be found in the pinned post.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show, follow us on socials, and check out the episode description for sources used during our research. You'll also find fun things like topic-based playlists and links to live show tickets for the Full Moon Energy Tour.
See y'all soon. Follow us over on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Watch full video versions of the show ad-free on Patreon and then free for anyone on YouTube. And you can see clips of the show from TikTok. And if you want a video of your own of us doing almost anything.
Probably maybe, now a lot of guinea pigs.
I was going to say. Oh, no. We got to get them acclimated to come in. But it could be like Petal, where if you request to see Petal in a cameo, we're like, well, we'll just sit here and wait till she comes outside. Yeah. We'll have to just wait until they're ready. But if you want to meet Petal or Luna and Pearl or any of us or McGruff, go to cameo.com and order your custom video shout out so we can say happy birthday, happy anniversary, whatever to the Sinisterhood fan in your life. Where are you at on the internet?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace. I'm trying to get both guineas in one shot. I haven't posted in so long, but I'm like, post. This is post worthy. I'm going to post about the guineas.
You're making the grid.
Yes. And I am on Threads at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on everywhere at Heather versus the world.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shout-outs. Alex Smith.
Kate Feltz.
Kelly Gilbert.
Katie Mollenhoff.
Carly Bolton.
Laurel Hosler.
Lizzie Ray.
Paula Martins.
Kimberly Zoldos.
Linnea.
Emily.
Sarah Thompson.
Meg Bonney.
Kylie Inn.
Maggie F.
Ashley Doherty.
Kiki LaRue.
Aaron LaFever.
And Susanna L. Grossman.
Thank you all so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you. We love each and every one of you. We hope we pronounced your names correctly. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Sinister.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.